You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, and happy Monday, my friends. Patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. The clown show continues on Capitol Hill. This is incredible what happened last Friday. By the way, where I'm going to get to with this, and I'll just tell you in advance, is paper ballots, Ron Paul, Iowa caucuses, they're hysterical about electronic voting on the computers. But a couple of things I want to share with you before we get to that. Last Friday, Mitch McConnell, poor Mitch, he's like Turtle Man, right? He's the old Republican guard in the United States Senate. He spent, a zillion years working his way up to that way. How old are tortoises live, 400 years? And he spent all his time working his way up to being the grand poobah, the minority leader of the Senate. And in fact, if the Republicans take the Senate, he'll be the majority leader. Which means that, he's really good at sticking the shiv in people's backs and stepping on people's heads and crushing people strategically and thinking six steps ahead. And he's got really good people advising him. And what makes it all the more effective is that he comes across as a turtle, as this mild mannered little kind of milquetoast. Well, I don't know. Today we're going to. Oh, those Democrats are terrible. Democrats are terrible. And so anyhow, Mitch never realized that he was going to have people in his own party in the other body, in the House of Representatives, the other half of Congress, the other half of the legislative branch, Article 1 of the Constitution. He never realized he was going to have people, he was going to have Republicans sticking the shiv in his back. And frankly, neither did John Boehner, who comes from the same old school as Mitch. It's just that John hasn't been around as long. And much of the time that he has been around, he's been hanging out in sunbeds and drinking his, I think gin and tonic is his drink of choice, or martinis, whatever it is. He's very seriously into these things, and smoking cigarettes, which may be why he's orange. I don't know. I mean, every now and then, I don't think he's ever denied that he uses bronzer or spray on tans. Tanning beds or whatever. Maybe it's just he smokes so much nicotine that it hasn't just yellowed the tips of his fingers, but his entire body. Whatever it is, John Boehner assured Mitch McConnell last week that here's the way we're going to screw the Democrats. We're going to screw the Democrats by, because the Democrats, they want a year-long tax break. $1,000 a person for the 160 million average working people. And they want to pay for it by hitting about 13,000 or something like that. I don't know what the number is, but it's not very big. A couple tens of thousands of people who earn more than $1 million a year, which would include people like John Paulson, the hedge fund billionaire who made $4 billion last year. Okay. His first $1 million, no change in his taxes. But after that, every $100 he makes, he's going to pay $3 in taxes. Now, if you're making $4 billion a year, that's $4,000 million. You take out the first million, that's tax-free, new tax-free. And then the other $3,999 million, each one, you have to pay an extra $3 on every $100 on that. It adds up pretty quickly. And it's enough to pay for a tax cut for 160 million working Americans of about $1,000 a year, which is a huge stimulus to the economy. Now, the Republicans are saying, this isn't a stimulus to the economy. You're taking that money away from rich people and giving it to poor people. Well, yeah, that's a stimulus because those rich people, if you're making more than $1 million a year, I guarantee you, you are not spending that money. I mean, how are you going to spend $1 million a year? Or more than? How do you spend $4 billion a year? I mean, okay, you've got the $5, $10, $20, $50 million apartment or house in Manhattan. Odds are that's already paid for. And if you're paying rent on it, it's going to one of the, it's going to Bloomberg. I mean, it's going to one of the billionaires in Manhattan, and they're not, this isn't going to end up at Walmart, right? Yeah, they'll spend some more money at Tiffany and maybe buy another Rolex watch, but where's that money going? Most of it's going to like Switzerland or, you know, European high-end jewelry manufacturers. Well, they might buy an extra corporate jet. Half of those are made in Europe or Brazil. They might buy a yacht. Most yachts are not made in the United States. So the bottom line is that, you know, taking that $3 a hundred after the first $1 million from the millionaires and giving it to people who make under $106,000, all of it went to 100 people making it, because it's just payroll tax. And you only pay payroll tax in the first $106,000 a year. Now, there's a payroll tax is the tax that only working people pay. Millionaires don't pay that. Or they do pay it, but, you know, only on the first $106,000. So it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. This is just a Social Security tax. Right. So the strategy that Boehner and McConnell worked out, Boehner, the bronze man who's the head of the House of Representatives, Republicans, who control the House, and Mitch McConnell, the turtle who runs the Republicans in the Senate, who are in a minority, the thing that they worked out was, we'll get rid of that tax on the millionaires because they buy our lunch and dinner and drinks and bronzing and vacations in the Seychelles and the and golf trips in Scotland. And we'll get rid of that and we'll replace it with a requirement that within the next 2 months, the president is going to have to say yes or no to running a pipeline to run this incredibly toxic slurry, this toxic sludge from Canada all the way through the middle of the United States, all the way down to Texas, where it'll be refined by big oil companies, maybe the Koch brothers, who knows, and whoever refines it's going to make a whole pile of money. And because this is really poisonous coal slurry, tar slurry, you know, shale slurry, this is the worst kind of oil. I mean, this is not Texas light crude, right? This is poisonous stuff. All that poison is going to go, or some of that poison is going to go up in the air and more people downwind in Texas and Mississippi and Alabama, Louisiana, they're going to get cancer. Cancer alley is going to get worse. And it will refine it into gasoline and we will ship it to China. They're actually expanding the Panama Canal and they're building super tankers so that they can take that gasoline to China or other locations around the world. Brazil's probably going to buy a fair amount of it. Growing economy. So this was the deal, and they said, let's shove this down the president's throat. And the president said, well, you know, at least I'll get 2 months' worth of economic stimulus, because when you give money to those people who make under $106,000 a year, they spend all of it, unlike the millionaires who will basically just stick in their Swiss bank account. And so they passed this through the Senate, over 80 votes. Democrats signed on to it, too, because the White House said, okay, that's fine, we'll sign it. And it goes to the House, and John Boehner has his conference call on Saturday with all the House members. He says, I got this great deal worked out with Turtle Man. And, you know, all you guys have to do is just come into town on Monday, and we'll have a vote on it, and everything will be cool. And Eric Cantor and the Tea Party Caucus said, wait a minute, young man. This is, we don't want to give tax cuts to people making under $106,000. Our tax cuts are only for millionaires and billionaires. And this doesn't require the president to do the XL pipeline. It just requires him to decide whether he's going to make a decision. So we want more crazy stuff in there. We want, like, you know, I don't know, execute illegals or something. They haven't figured it out yet, but they want more crazy stuff in there.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And so Boehner and McConnell's deal is probably going to get out of flames tonight. And the Republicans just don't know what to do. We're still suffering from them 30 years later. It's our Twilight Zone alert. Yes, this is everything that is wrong with Fox News. Here's the thing. But before we play this, let me just point out how they don't engage in the debate. They set the frame. And once you're in that frame, no matter what you say, you lose. Here it is.
Killing the Keystone Pipeline with thousands of jobs on the line. Is the president making a bad business decision to please environmentalists? We'll see what Donald Trump thinks about that coming up next.
As Jacob says, everything that's wrong with GOP TV in 10 seconds. Amazing. Okay, so I laid out for you the Tea Party clown show that's continuing. Now, here's another one that's even more fascinating. January 3rd, just, you know, a couple of weeks down the road here. This coming weekend is Christmas. The weekend after that is New Year's. And right after that, January 3rd, Ron Paul is right now the new front runner on the Iowa caucus. The flavor of the month, Newt Gingrich. And later on, I'm going to tell you why I agree with Newt, which will give you some really interesting talking points to share with your Republican friends over Thanksgiving or over Christmas dinner or Hanukkah dinner or whatever it may be, Kwanzaa. Pick your holiday or your secular, you know, your Festivus dinner. Ron Paul is now the new front runner because Mitt has diminished because the Fox said, okay, he was the flavor for three. He had his 15 minutes. He had his 3 days of fame. We're going to pull a rug out from under him. They haven't gone after Ron Paul yet, although they think that Ron Paul keeps going after himself by saying things like, you know, we can't have these wars and, you know, stuff like that. But here's the thing. The Iowa caucus is done online, or at least is tabulated online. I'm not sure if the entire thing is done online. I don't think it is. I'm quite sure that they're done in individual meeting rooms and things, but after everybody votes in each one of the little caucus things, they put them onto an online database and they tabulate them all online. And they say that Anonymous has threatened to hack the results, has called for a peaceful shutdown of the January 3rd Iowa caucus. Now, I'm frankly, and I have no connections to Anonymous. I'm not speaking here for them. I don't know them. I don't, you know, I think they do some kind of cool stuff from time to time. But that, you know, I can't. In fact, I don't even think Anonymous people can speak for Anonymous. It's sort of like the, you know, Occupy Wall Street folks. You know, they don't have spokespeople. And I'm certainly not one of them. But my guess would be that this probably wasn't even them. That what's going on is that the Republicans are afraid that the Ron Paul people, see, keep in mind, all the Republicans who are running except Ron Paul are supported by mostly old white people. And the operative word here is old. They would know how to hack a mailbox, maybe, on a good day. Right? You know, hey, I'm not even sure they're sophisticated enough to use a paperclip to do the little key part, you know, and ice, you know, lock pick it. But they certainly know how to throw a cherry bomb in there, blow the front off, and get the ballot out. But the young Republicans, they're going with Ron Paul. And young Republicans know how to hack computers. And so my personal theory here, and I, you know, you can, conspiracy theory number 3722, who knows, but my personal theory here, What we do know is that the Iowa caucus, the Republicans who run the Iowa caucus, are officially notifying all of their groups, please keep paper records as backup, because we're worried that the vote's going to get hacked. And I think they're afraid that the Ron Paul people are going to hack it. A secondary conspiracy theory that I'll share with you, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, is that they're not so afraid that the Ron Paul people are going to hack the vote, that they want to have these paper ballots because they intend to hack the vote because they know that Ron Paul is going to win and they can't allow that to happen. So they're going to hack their own vote and make Mitt Romney the winner or Michelle Bachmann or Newt Gingrich or somebody else, anybody but Ron Paul. And then when they've got all the paper ballots, they'll take them to some central room and they'll just, you know, one for you, two for me, one for you, one, two, two for me. You know, they'll do the old fashioned ballot stuffing thing because that's what they've done for years and years. I mean, this is ballot stuffing did not come along with electronic voting. So who and this is just the Iowa caucus. I mean, you know, this is which raises the larger issue of what happens if the national vote gets hacked, and is activists going to is Anonymous going to participate in this, or are the Republicans going to participate in this as they apparently have in years past? Because every single election that we've seen where the electronic voting machines have gone weird, we've seen it coming about. The result of it has been what's called redshift. In other words, it's always the electronic voting machines have always shifted to the Republican side. And I frankly don't think that's the result of the way the chips are made in China. Or Vietnam. Or Silicon Valley. Although maybe it is. I don't know. But I seriously don't think so. In fact, just a few months ago, we learned that this was a serious scientific study done at the University of Pennsylvania, as I recall, that the Diebold machines that they're using all over the country, that they could be hacked with $15 worth of parts that you can buy at Radio Shack and a level of knowledge that you can acquire going to a high school science class. So what's going on? What's going on? You've got, first of all, you've got the House of the clown show at the House and Senate is continuing. Secondly, we've got, you know, they're getting hysterical about Ron Paul on the paper ballot. Might this be enough to cause the rest of America, or at least the rest of the Republican Party, to wake up and say, okay, you know, we successfully stole the elections for George Bush twice. We can't do this anymore, though, because the Democrats have figured out how to do this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Or is there bigger fear that the young Ron Paul people have figured out how to do this? Oh my gosh, we could have a libertarian as president.
Sex the most this Christmas season. Ba-la-la-la-la.
Yes, happy holidays, my friends. Our crazy alert for the day, now for a light bulb meal. Brooklyn resident R.J. Williams has his name in the record books now, scarfing down a light bulb in a record-setting time. Recordsetter.com was on hand to adjudicate the glass chowdown last week. The rules were simple. Williams had to eat the entire bulb except for the metal parts. He could use only his teeth to break the bulb, and he could only use water to wash it down. Williams accomplished the feat in just under 34 seconds for a new world record. Also reportedly in attendance, Speaker of the House John Boehner, just to make sure the light bulb used did not comply with the new EPA standards on energy efficiency, which, of course, is the manufactured outrage over at GOP TV Fox so-called news this week. Oh, jeez. Anyhow, just a couple. I'm going to pick up your calls in just a second here. But just a quick, you know, overview. One of the things, you know, we fair and slightly unbalanced news here. Stuff you need to know. We've talked about the clown show. We've talked about Ron Paul. The last convoy of U.S. troops did pass out of Iraq over the last weekend. 9-year U.S. war effort. One U.S. soldier died in an IED attack, you know, driving over a landmine or being hit by an IED. So we do have the fulfillment of John Kerry's, I lack the phrase, ironic, prophetic, horrific, whatever, question that he asked the United States Senate back in the 1970s. Who wants to be the last man to die for a lie or for a mistake? And this is truly tragic. Occupy Wall Street recognizes 3-month anniversary. Demonstrators are continuing. And the president of North Korea, Kim Jong-il, croaked. Here is clip one. This is the North Korean news reporting his death.
위대한 용도자 김정일 동지께서 주체에 대.
They really love their dear leader. So anyhow, that this is. Oh, and you know, with regard to the Republicans, what they're up to. This is the, clip number four. Chuck Schumer. This was so well said.
To play games with the middle class tax cut is very, very unfair.
Right. See, this is the thing. The Republicans, they you know, President Obama and the Democrats, they want to give the middle class, people making under $106,000 a year, they want to give them a tax cut, a 3% tax cut that lasts a year. The Republicans in the Senate said, we'll give them 2 months. The Republicans in the House are saying, screw them. And so this is becoming a debate between the Republicans in the House and the Senate. Meanwhile, if you make millions a year, that if you're the top 0.1% of income in the United States, then you get 50% of all the capital gains in the United States. Capital gains, of course, are the money that has a maximum tax rate, not a 35% like working people pay, but a 15%. Mitt Romney was asked about this on GOP TV over the weekend. Clip number four, Jacob. Here's what he had to say about, you know, the fact that he pays 14% income tax on average, maybe 12%. We haven't been able to figure it. It's somewhere between 12 and 14% because the maximum tax rate on capital gains is 15%. And so here's what Romney had to say.
No tax on interest, dividends, or capital gains for middle income.
But the argument is middle class people can't afford. They don't have enough money to have a lot of capital gains and dividends.
I recognize it's not a huge tax cut. It is a tax reduction, and it allows middle income.
Yeah, I recognize that. Yeah. No. See, he wants to take that 15% down to zero, the percent that he pays right now. He wants to take it to zero. And Chris Wallace says, oh, wait a minute. Middle class people don't pay that. They pay the 35%, you know, working people. Paul in Irvine, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Paul, or KTLK. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, Tom, can you hear me okay?
Just fine.
Okay, hey, you mentioned the last troops leaving Iraq, by the way. The last name of the last troop killed, his name was David Emmanuel Hickman. He was 23 years old. And if you read in the Washington Post, he said that he was questioning what they were doing there, that they were just policing the country. So I just thought I should throw out his name there to honor him.
Thank you.
So
thank you for doing that. I didn't have that information in front of me, and it's a
in
sad thing.
It's a touching story. We just forget about that and all the Super Bowl cheering that you see at the Palin rally.
Well, we forget about it in part because we don't have a draft. And so most of the people who are in the military are either people who, you know, have a family history, you know, they grew up wanting to be in the military, their career military, or they're poor. And it's a job.
Rachel Maddow called it the military's war, not America's war. It's not America's war because.
Yeah, she's absolutely right.
What I wanted to call about, about the election, I thought it interesting that Bob Dole, a moderate, is endorsing Mitt Romney, somebody that the GOP really doesn't want to run.
Well, he's the moderate. Mitt Romney is this generation's Bob Dole. And he's and he would probably lose the same way Bob Dole did.
It's very ironic that both he and Newt Gingrich are at are sort of at the top of the poll or whatever. Newt Gingrich is falling in the polls because Bob Dole was, I think, his age against Bill Clinton and him being a moderate really hurt him against an incumbent Democratic president.
He did not.
I think you would agree.
Right. Bob Dole did not activate the base the same way that Mitt Romney will not activate the base. And that's going to take him out. And that's going to be a real problem. Paul, thanks for that. Ann in Bend, Oregon. Hey, Ann, what's up?
Hi. I went as an observer or a worker at the Iowa caucus a number of years ago, not too many years ago. I went for Dean. And I think what the Republicans are doing is just trying to stir up a tempest in a teapot.
Are you talking about in the Iowa caucus saying that they're worried that their vote might be hacked and therefore everybody should keep paper ballots?
Because they do, it can be done telephonically. We just sat around in a cold room in little bitty chairs and in groups And I can't remember how we regrouped.
And you voted, and then you called somebody and said, here's the vote. That's the, what you mean by telephonic. But what if the person on the other end of the line, what if some Ron Paul advocate calls them first and says that that person is you?
Oh, they have passwords and stuff.
Oh.
I think that they're just trying to.
So you see this as a tempest in a teapot.
Going to, make up a big fuss about this.
Well, I hope they make a big deal about it, Ann, because I think we need to highlight the fact that our voting systems in this country are insecure. And
I agree with you entirely.
Thank you very much, Ann. Thank
bye-bye.
You. Thanks for the call. Because we need Americans to be going, whoa? You know, one of those Scooby-Doo moments, whoa? Really? You know, the voting machines, you can't trust, whoa? You can't trust them? That's what we need. And, they use a password. I wonder if they're using the password of the old Order of the Star-Spangled Banner. The Order of the Star-Spangled Banner was an American political party that ran the state of Massachusetts in the late 19th century. And they had, political power elsewhere, but that's pretty much their base of power was Massachusetts. And they had a secret code word. And their secret code word was, I know nothing. Which is why they are referred to in history as the Know Nothing Party or the Know Nothings. Yes, you can Google it. It's true. And it was a Protestant secret society that was concerned about the rise of the Catholics in Boston. And that led directly to a coalition with a fellow by the name of Horace Mann and the imposition of forced public education. But that's a whole nother rant that we'll get into some other day. Steve in Davisburg, Michigan. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Good afternoon.
Hey,
I think about this voting thing all the time myself, too. And what's your opinion on asking the UN for help in monitoring our elections?
I think we should have had the UN in here ever since 2000 when our ability to have exit polls collapsed. You know, when our exit polls started deviating so significantly from the actual result of the electronic voting machines that Republicans started winning when the exit polls showed that the Democrats were winning. That was the point at which the UN should have stepped in. And the Carter Center actually tried to. They offered their services, and they were rebuffed. And some states have actually made it illegal for there to be election monitors. So I'm with you, Steve. I'm absolutely with you. Bruce in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Hey, Bruce, you got a minute. What's up?
Yeah, about the caucus in Iowa. For the Republicans, they don't actually caucus like the Democrats do.
Right.
They just go to a central polling place and vote on a paper ballot.
Oh, interesting.
Iowa doesn't allow touchscreen voting anymore.
Right. But they do. But then after they've added it all up, though, they put it on a computer database, right? A statewide database.
Well, yeah, but it presumably that would be public. This is run like it's a real election.
Right.
And of course, for the Republicans, they don't actually count anyway because the state party picks the delegates. So this is really a little more than a straw poll.
Oh, that's very interesting. Okay, Bruce, thanks. From Cedar Rapids, Iowa. You live there?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. Thanks for the information, Bruce. Appreciate it. So, just like, the straw poll, of course, they sell the straws, right? Michelle Bachmann bought the most straws. She won the straw poll in Iowa. Amazing. So what are we going to do? Oh, and I got to tell you why I agree with Newt. This is going to make some Republican heads explode.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Maybe even some Democrats, but actually I think at the end of the day, probably not. I think progressives will agree with me that Newt's on to something here. 45 minutes past the hour.
Just hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring, ding, tingling too. Come on, it's lovely weather for
Yes, happy holidays, my friends. What's going on here with, oh my, are we going to figure out, what's up with electronic voting? Do you think people are going to wake up? You know who's done some really good reporting on this is Brad Friedman. You can check out his blog over at bradblog.com. And, and Bev Harris has done some great work as well. And you'll have to Google Bev Harris because I know that she has a website and then there's another one with the .org or .com at the end that like is different than hers. And so I don't want to get it wrong. So just Google Bev Harris and you will find her website as well. Some great stuff out there. Mike in Queens, New York. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind?
Hey, John. Just quick, this weekend, I was, you know, flicking through the channels, and I saw John Walsh from America's Most Wanted. He had some kind of special on.
Right.
Now, this is on Fox TV.
Right.
At the end of the show, he did a rant, and he says, you know, I'm looking through across the country, and the policemen and firemen are getting cuts. These brave people are getting cuts. Why aren't the rich doing their fair share?
Whoa.
John Walsh, by the way,
now is one of the rich.
Yeah, and he's saying, why not? Why can't you guys just do the right thing? I was like, whoa.
That's incredible. And on Fox TV. Yeah, on Fox TV. See, that's the thing. I mean, this is Newt Gingrich arresting judges. Well, I'll get back to that in a few minutes. Let me get a couple more of your calls in here. Frank in Orange County. Hey, Frank, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how's it going?
Great. What's on your mind?
I just want to make a quick comment, I guess. You know, the Republicans are always talking about trickle-down economics. Individuality, people taking, you know, responsibility for their own actions. But, you know, what's really happening, this is a trickle-up economic system that they're talking about, you know. When the top screws up, you know, they get bailed out. And when the bottom screws up, well, you're on your own.
Yeah, it's very much, you're absolutely right. Instead of calling it a trickle-down, we should call it trickle-up. And all the benefits trickle up to the banksters and to the very wealthy people. And when they get in trouble, they get bailed out. And if you're on the bottom, well, you become part of the nation of peons. Connie in Monterey, California. Hey, Connie, what's up?
Hi, Tom. It's really great to talk to you. I cannot believe that President Obama capitulated to the Republicans about the Keystone Pipeline.
Well, he hasn't done it yet. This, you know, there's actually a possibility. What this 2 month, and this is probably why the Republicans are opposed to this in the House of Representatives, because what this 2 month deal in the Senate says is that within 2 months, he has to decide whether or not he's going to decide. And so he could just as easily at the end of 2 months say, you know, the State Department said they want a year to do the science on this, and it would be inappropriate for me to decide yes, so I'm deciding no for right now. And you guys can bring it up again later on. I mean, they can always bring things up later. So,
well, I heard that he did the same thing with taxing the millionaires. He capitulated to that.
Well, that never made it to the floor. You know, he didn't have a choice. Although it's, you know, I suppose that he could have used the bully pulpit to push that.
Am I not understanding? But there's a funding bill.
Yes.
And that tax.
Oh, you're talking about the omnibus spending bill, the $1 trillion that's going to keep us going for another 6 months, roughly.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was supposed to be in the bill.
Right.
But he capitulated on that.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Well, yes. In as much as he capitulated, the Democrats in the Senate capitulated, the Democrats in the House capitulated, pretty much everybody capitulated because the Republicans were saying that we will not raise taxes on millionaires, period, and we will shut down the government. And the math that was done, the political calculus that was done by the Obama administration, by the Democrats, was that if the Republicans shut down the government, that their PR machine is so good. And this is the problem the Democrats have. You know, you've got, you know, some 900 or so right-wing talk radio shows out there. You've got an entire 24/7 TV network that's on basic cable, not the more, you know, MSNBC,
I
at least you got to pay for it.
Can't get all the good.
Yeah,
stuff,
I, you know, I right now I can't get Current and I have to pay extra for MSNBC and it's like, you know, so but Fox is ubiquitous. It's everywhere because Rupert Murdoch is willing to make a smaller number of dollars to get a larger audience, which ultimately gives him a larger number of dollars because he gets more advertising revenue.
Right.
Which is a whole another discussion. He's following what I think is a smart business plan. And I don't know why NBC doesn't. And maybe it's because they don't really like the ideology of their own programming or whatever. I don't want to speculate on it. I guess I just did. But I just don't have a clue. But the bottom line is that the Democrats know that the messaging on the right is so good that if they allow the Republicans to shut down the government going into the end of the year, going into Christmas, and suddenly 800,000 American, quote, non-essential, end quote, people are not working in government jobs and don't have paychecks and you know, basically thrown out of work, it's going to be an economic disaster. Not to mention a political disaster, and they will get blamed. The president will get blamed for it, and because there's not a clear Newt Gingrich. I mean, when Newt Gingrich shut down government back in the 90s, you had he had been sent to the back of the bus or the airplane, you know, when the president, President Clinton was flying back from Asia, as I recall, and Newt was sent back into the back along with the average people, and he didn't get to sit in the half a dozen or so first class seats up in the front with the other heads of state and big shots of the administration. And he was so angry about that he actually told the press, which was stupid. And he shut down the government.
He told the press that he was angry about it?
Yeah, he told the press that he was upset about it. And so there was a picture on the front page of either the New York Post or the New York, what's the other one? New York Daily News or whatever. One of the New York tabloids. There was a picture of Newt in a diaper, you know, as a baby with a bottle, you know, throwing a tantrum, kicking his feet and crying. And it said, "Cry Baby Newt." And that went totally viral. Everybody in the country picked it up. And that same day, Newt shut down the government. And everybody just assumed that Newt shut down the government, not over some great high-minded ideal or anything like that, but because he got sent to the back of the train, or the back of the plane.
Yeah.
And, you know, there isn't one of those moments right now. They don't have, the White House doesn't have the meme. So, yeah, they're capitulating, but I have a feeling that they've done the math on this, and they know that if they don't, they're going to lose. I think that they should be taxing the millionaires. They think they should be taxing the millionaires. We'll see how it shakes out as we go into the election year. Connie, thanks a lot for the call. 57 minutes past the hour. Up next, let's find out what's going on in Fukushima. We're getting strange stories.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back, my friends, to the second hour of our program. In the first hour of our program, we were speculating about why is it that the Iowa caucus Republicans are all freaked out about the possibility that their electronic systems, their online systems for posting the results of their caucus votes might get hacked. Could it be because the Ron Paul supporters are young people who know how to use computers? I don't know. But maybe we could start a national discussion about electronic voting machines and insecure systems. And you know, Ohio in 2004, well, probably that'll never get brought up again. But anyhow, you get that. Plus, the Tea Party Clown Show continues on Capitol Hill. So we will get into that as we continue through our but first, the Fukushima was declared recently by the federal government, not our federal government, but the Japanese federal government, as being cold. Everything's fine. Nothing to worry about. We got this thing under control. Sounds a little bit like Slim Pickens, you know, riding the nuke down out of the airplane. But everything under control. Paul Gunter is the director of the Reactor Oversight Project at beyondnuclear.org. A group that keeps track of this kind of stuff and is very well educated on these issues. Paul, welcome back to our program.
Hey, thank you, Tom.
So, good news. Nothing to worry about. Fukushima. Let's book a flight.
No, not yet. Okay. This is Kabuki Theater.
Oh.
It's really more of the same, an effort to control information. I mean, even the New York Times is now reporting that this cold shutdown is being declared over serious doubts is the headline.
How do you cold shut down three nuclear reactors that have melted into a liquid puddle of white hot molten radioactive crud?
Yeah, I think it would have been more appropriate if they were to have had some assessment of cold meltdown, but that's not this is really more about fulfilling the Japanese government pledge to bring the accident under control by January 2012. So this is it's a declaration, but there remains many experts who believe that this is not the true situation.
Now, one of the things that concerns me is, in addition to the fact that three of these reactors have melted down and continue to burn into the core of the earth, and may hit water levels, and we may see steam explosions, et cetera, is that other of these reactors are built the same way reactors are built in the United States, many of them, in that they have the nuclear waste stored in their ceilings, in their roofs.
Yeah.
And
the nuclear waste itself, if the roof were to give way and it were to fall onto the ground, the zirconium rods would bust open, the stuff that keeps it from each other would break open, and even though it's spent nuclear fuel, it, you know, could it begin fissioning? And yeah. And if not, could it, it still contaminate the environment?
Yeah, there are still experts who fear what's called recriticality. I mean, clearly the situation is that the there's a lot more uncertainty about how the this is going to proceed. There is this ongoing cooling operation that is preventing this recriticality, but it's not built to any earthquake standard at all. It's really just a patchwork.
They're just pumping water in.
They're pumping water in, and, you know, we've got now more than 90,000 tons of highly radioactive water accumulating on site. It's already been known to be leaking into the Pacific Ocean. So there's, an earthquake could set this whole thing off again. Let's remember that all that nuclear waste that you're talking about is still in these four rooftop pools, and Unit 4 is looking more and more like the Leaning Tower of Pisa right now.
You mean the whole building itself?
The whole building is listing. And
the structure that's holding the pool.
Structurally listing. There's about 150 tons of high-level nuclear waste. The full core was offloaded to the top of this rooftop pool, and is sitting in this pool, six stories up.
So this is not even spent nuclear waste.
This is reactor core. They were refueling Unit 4 when the accident happened. So we had meltdowns in Units 1, 2, and 3, but the core had been moved to the roof at Unit 4, and that building is now shifting. And they've been sending engineers in there to try to shore it up, to poles and whatever to keep it from falling over. But if that whole thing falls over, it's just going to dump a whole reactor core right out onto the ground, and that's a big concern for recriticality right now.
And recriticality is a fancy way of saying fission.
The meltdown resumes.
Right. In other words, the nuclear reaction begins all over again. Now, this is not the kind of nuclear reaction that we see in bombs. This is the kind of nuclear reaction we see in nuclear reactors, where it gets white hot, it produces amazing amounts of heat and radiation.
And hydrogen gas.
And hydrogen gas, which is highly explosive. And it produces amazing amounts of radioactive isotopes, many of which are themselves gases, iodine, xenon, and whatnot. And those things get into the atmosphere immediately, right?
Right. So, I think that we're still in a guessing game in terms of what's real and what's staged. There's a reporter who was an undercover worker who just held a news conference in Tokyo, which was just reported in the Manichi News, which is a reliable and ongoing source if you want to really keep track of what's going on at Fukushima coming out of Japan.
Is this in Japanese or English?
They have an English version online,
uh-huh.
But it's the Manichi News. But Tomohiko Suzuki is saying that he told a Foreign Correspondents Club news conference that the work is basically charade right now. That there's they're just letting things run their course still. They're pouring lots of water in, and there's a lot of hope that they've cooled it down. But again, let's remember that the radioactivity is so intense that nobody can really get in there to look and see what's going on. It is really about computer modeling right now. There are some temperature gauges that are tracking lowering temperatures, but whether or not they're actually projecting, accurate temperatures of where that core sits, and there have been any number of projections. Some of the projections are that the core has already gotten into the Earth. Even TEPCO's own projection says that it long ago left the vessel. It melted through, dropped to the floor, and burned through two-thirds of the concrete floor and was well on its way out of the reactor basement. So
that means you've got four reactors that are in full meltdown.
Yeah, well, the three reactors that were operating melted down. The fourth reactor, we have unit four with all that fuel right. up on the roof, leaning to the side.
Right. Can't they get a robot in there, or is the radiation so intense that it fries the electronics of the robots?
They have been getting robots in there, but we've not been getting any sense that they're able to do anything, because of the heat, the radiation. But, you know, tracking this stuff.
That's right. These are millions of degrees hot, aren't they?
Well, it's extremely hot, and it's hard to locate right now. They're still using computers to try to locate the position of the core.
Amazing.
In these units 1, 2, and 3.
Amazing. So, don't book your summer vacation at Fukushima now. Okay, you can get all the information over at beyondnuclear.org. Paul Gunter. Paul, thanks so much for being with us.
No nukes.
Yeah, no nukes for sure. Good talking with you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, that and the amazing story of the Tea Party Clown Show on Capitol Hill continuing right after this.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows.
That's because he flew over Fukushima.
All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names.
That's because they didn't have to go over Fukushima.
They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer game.
Oh, my. Well, speaking, actually, there's actually a subtext to that also. You know, last year, every year, actually, well, not every year, but for the last couple of years, at the week of Christmas, the week of New Year's, and we're doing four live shows this week, three live shows next week, and so I'm going to talk about it every day just for one segment. Back in 1978, I am that old. Louise and I, my wife and I, and she really ran the program. I mean, I did the fundraising and wrote the legal stuff and the grants and things, but she ran the program, the people, the kids, the everything. Louise, has run pretty much every one of our companies all over all these years, and she's so good. Started a community for abused kids in New Hampshire, the Salem Children's Village. And then, after about a decade or so, because our kids, we didn't have a school. And we were taking, and those of you who were watching or listening last year heard me tell some of the horror stories of the kids that we were taking in at that time, who had just been through hell. And we were using the local public school. Now, we had managed to kind of miraculously get 136 acres of land on a 2,000-acre lake up in New Hampshire, up in Romney, New Hampshire. It's there. You can see it at SalemChildrensVillage.com, .org, rather. And, in fact, Louise and I spent our Thanksgiving, instead of having Thanksgiving, we flew up there on Wednesday, or no, on Thursday, on Thanksgiving Day. We flew up there on Thursday. We spent all day Friday at Solemn/Hunter, and then we flew home on Saturday. So that was our Thanksgiving. And about a decade ago, maybe a little longer than that, I'd have to go back and look, because the local town only had 900 people and we were using their school for our kids, and so many of our kids were really problem children, in quotes, we started our own school. Now, I had written a book back in 92, I think it first came out, called ADD, A Different Perception. Now, I wanted the title to be Hunter in a Farmer's World. My publisher had a different idea, so it's called ADD, A Different Perception. But the idea was that these kids were not damaged goods, that they were actually genetically hunters, hunter-gatherers, who lived in a world that had been taken over by farmers and engineers, and that therefore they didn't do well in schools. And so we created our own school called the Hunter School for these kids. And the Hunter School has grown over the years. The program for abused kids has shrunk over the years, in large part because the states have come up with other things. And
So anyhow, here we have our fundraiser. This is our fundraiser, our annual fundraiser for the Hunter School. And hunterschool.org is the website. We're giving a copy of the Tom Hartman Reader, which tells the story. If you put that back up, Louise, I'd appreciate it. It tells the story of how Solemn got started and the Hunter School got started. And the publisher, Barrett Kohler, is donating the books. And with every $250 or greater donation to the Hunter School, and you can do it at their website, hunterschool.org. There's also an address if you want to mail them a check. But hunterschool.org. With every $250 or larger donation, I will send you a copy, an autographed copy of my brand new book, The Tom Hartman Reader, which tells how we started this. And here's a clip of one of the kids from Hunter School on Oprah a couple of months ago. His name is Zach.
And now the way you calm and prevent the negative energy from entering your physical space, yeah, your body space, is that you do what? What do you do now to prevent that from happening?
I do my white light. I just say stuff like, I am love, I am light, I am cool, I am awesome, I am perfect, I am wise when I choose love. And mm-hmm, that helps me calm down.
Mm. That could be a good lesson for the world, don't you think?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Not just for you.
No, for the whole world.
I think the whole world could use some calm and white light.
They need it.
Yes, they do.
There's also a link to this from our homepage at tomhartman.com, but it's hunterschool.org. Here's a letter from one of the parents who has sent, the school program has gone beyond just being the school for the Community for Abused Kids and has become a school for kids from all over the world, all over the country. And we actually have one international child. And it's for kids. Well, here, this is from a mother. She said, our son has been struggling for years. He has been diagnosed with Asperger's and ADHD and has been extremely challenging for him and the whole family. He's been suspended out district multiple times. Recently was hospitalized because he couldn't handle anything, things anymore. He's only 9 years old. We have tried all avenues, mainstream as well as alternative approaches. Evaluations, counselors, psychiatrists, psychologists, medications, homeopathic therapies, acupuncture, everything. Desperate and faced with the recommendation of a residential program, we researched and found the Hunter School. So anyhow, to make a long story short, they placed their kid, their child in the Hunter School. She writes, in just one short month of working with us and our child, we have our son back. When he started working with Michael, Michael's one of the therapists at Hunter School, he had extreme outbursts, was negative, depressed, and never showed any type of emotion, not even a smile. In the past month, he is going to school every day. He is happy. And the past weekend that we spent with him, he was smiling and showing real, in quotes, and appropriate, in quotes, emotion. As a mother who has not seen this in her son for 6 years, is a 9-year-old child, it was huge. We are very grateful to the Hunter School for providing this critical piece to the success of the children who attend. Thank you for giving us our son back. Now, this is from the mother of one of our kids. Your donations will help with scholarships for children in need. You will change the world by donating to Hunter School and the Salem Children's Village. Please help. This is a good program and dear to my heart. With a $250 or any size donation is useful and necessary. But with the publisher has donated a limited number of books to us. With $250 or greater donations, Hunter School will send you an autographed copy of the Tom Hartman Reader, my most recent book, which contains a chapter about the starting of this program. So that all said, we will get back to politics and general insanity in just a moment, 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Oh, and the North Korean president has died of a heart attack. Interesting times we live in.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring. Snowing and blowing up bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has begun.
Happy holidays, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour. Welcome back.
Baby, I'm crazy.
Our crazy alert for the day. You ever heard of AshleyMadison.com? Obviously, this is the kind of publicity stunt that they do to get people like me to say things like that. But nonetheless, this is a website for people who are married and want to have an affair discreetly with another person who's married and wants to have an affair where, in theory, no one will ever find out. And so to promote, and it's, and they're doing really, really well, and they're making a lot of money. And so to promote their business, this website that promotes adultery has endorsed Newt Gingrich for president and even put a giant billboard in Pennsylvania announcing it. They have this giant picture of Newt with his fingers up to his lips, and it says, shh, you know, and then the headline, the big type says, faithful Republican. And underneath that, the same size type, unfaithful husband. So, yeah. In fact, their tagline is, life is short, have an affair. Gingrich has admitted to cheating on his wives, and Noel Biederman, the founder of the Cheaters website, explained, now that Newt is the leading contender in the race for the GOP nomination, we felt compelled to make a point to illustrate how times have changed when a serial divorcee adulterer is capturing the hearts of the American people. Yeah. Except I don't think he's going to. I really think Ron Paul is the guy, and that's why the Republicans are getting hysterical about paper ballots in Iowa, maybe because they think they can burn them. I don't know. We'll see. Justin in Huntington Beach. Hey, Justin, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how you doing? It's about this payroll tax cut extension that the House is nixing. And, you know, the main reason, in my opinion, is in the original House bill, they wanted to fundamentally change unemployment. What they wanted to do was to step it down from 99 weeks down to 79 weeks and then eventually to 59 weeks.
Right.
Thus kicking about 3.5 million people off of unemployment.
Right.
And then turn around and blame Barack Obama for signing the bill.
Why? And not only that, blame him for the tanking, you know, for the 1.5 or 2% drop in GDP that would produce.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a classic Republican, nothing up my sleeve, and then, blame it on the president.
Don't look at the other sleeve.
Own doing.
Right.
Yes, don't look at the other hand. That's the one doing all the dirty stuff.
Right.
So, but that's just my take on that. And, again, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. You're welcome, Justin. I think you're very insightful, and I think you may well be right. Desmond in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Desmond, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. I got a weird call today. A robocall asking for people to go online and sign a petition. It was running runhillary2012.net. While I've been waiting for you to pick up, I have gone. I see that the week in has an article about, will Hillary challenge Obama?
Right.
The Beast, Daily Beast, had an article.
Yeah, that was some time
about
ago.
This.
Yeah.
Yes, that was. I think that was in August.
Yeah.
Then another UK entertainment weekly type thing,
yeah.
Mail Online,
yeah.
Had an article.
Yeah.
And it something called Politicus USA.
Yeah, which we have no idea what it is, but I can tell you what's going. You know, Desmond, Hillary Clinton has made it very clear that she has no interest in running for president of the United States any longer, period. In fact, when she's done being Secretary of State, she intends to retire and do good work like her husband is doing and like Jimmy Carter has done and things, that kind of thing, you know, do volunteer work. She is, I mean, the next generation of Clintons are coming along with her daughter, and she's, you know, she's in her mid-60s, and she's like, that's it, I'm out of here, enough of this already. And I believe her. I absolutely believe her. And I would guess that this is probably an effort being done by Republicans to get more disenchantment about Obama. They're trying every dirty trick they can about Obama.
But that's why I wanted to put this out there, just so people would know, because I'm in Brooklyn, New York, and I was shocked to hear this, because the things that you just said, I've heard also.
Yeah.
That she's very happy being Secretary of State, and she's excellent at that job.
You bet. She is. She is very good at it. And I can't imagine in my wildest dreams that she would challenge Barack Obama for president of the United States. And if she was going to, by the way, we would have heard 1,000 leaks by now. Right. Everything would be buzzing, and it's not. So, A, she's not going to challenge Obama. And 4 years from now, she's going to be a lot closer to 70 than she is right now, and I genuinely don't think that she has any interest in running for president at that age. I think that she, you know, there is a point in time where people do say, okay, you know, I've worked my ass off all my life. I'm gonna take a break here. And she certainly has, and she certainly deserves it. And I that's my personal opinion, but I think that this is an attempt to tarnish Obama's chances, or to diminish the enthusiasm for him by going after the Democratic base. So just personal opinion, but I think that's it. Desmond, thanks for the call. Middleton in Ona, West Virginia. Hey, Middleton, what's up?
Thank you, Tom, for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
Do you know the phone number for calling Congress? You know, I can give you that phone number so everybody can call their congressman if they want it.
Sure. Why don't you do that?
I know that by heart.
Okay. What is it?
1-202-224-3121. And that's so everybody, all you do is call that number and you get the switchboard and you just say the name of the congressman or a congresswoman, whoever you want, and they'll connect you with them. And you can tell them all the things you want to tell them.
Right. We also have over at callcongress.org some toll-free numbers that you can use if you're paying for,
yeah.
You know, although on a cell phone, it's you pay for the minutes either way. But if you want a toll-free number, and that number, 224-3121, and the White House comment line, which is 202-456-1111, are all over.
Yeah, I called that this morning.
So what are you calling about, Middleton? What's got your ire today?
You know, the Keystone Pipeline.
Yeah.
You know, have you watched the hearing that the House of Representatives has on with the executives on the Keystone project?
I confess I have not had the time to watch that C-SPAN coverage, no.
Well, it would be important if you watch it because what the guy said, you know, I don't know which one of the congressmen it was, but they asked him if they would sign a document and say that they would keep all the products in the U.S. and they will not sign the petition.
No, of course not. This is for export. This is for export. Plan A was for them to run a pipeline from you know, this is in west central kind of, this is in western Canada. Plan A was for them to run a pipeline to the west coast and ship this refining the stuff there or ship unrefined oil to China for a refinery. This is principally for use in Asia. Plan B, because there's a major rainforest there, a northern rainforest there, and other, you know, sensitive habitats. Plan B was to run it across the United States. And they got so much pushback, the Canadians got so much pushback from their neighboring province that they've gone to Plan B. And, I mean, you know, this is a transnational corporation. This isn't a government that's trying to do this. And
yeah, you know, he even admitted that they would ship the excess diesel out.
Right.
And, you know, here our truck drivers are driving and, you know, delivering food from one state to another all the way over the United States, paying up to $4 or more for a gallon of diesel. And look at this. It's not fair.
Right.
To the people that corporations are.
You're absolutely right, Middleton. I'm totally with you. Thank you for calling and making that point. And in fact, if they want to have inexpensive diesel, then make it legal to grow hemp. Hemp seed converts to diesel oil. It is the most efficient converter of sunlight into diesel fuel on Earth. And especially in northern climates. And they could do it. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward thing. So anyhow, Sandy and Baccarus, Ohio. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yes, you are.
Okay, Sandy, what's up?
I'm calling. My reason was at the beginning, you were referring to electronic voting.
Yeah.
I would like to give you our past experience on our last vote here we had.
Mm-hmm. In Ohio.
Our commissioners got together, and we had every precinct within the city limits at our county fairground at the big youth building, and every precinct was set up all around in that building.
Right.
And it went so great that the count was so close because it was being monitored. We just got our mayor last week.
So you got a good mayor because you had a good clean vote.
We got a good mayor. I'm saying the vote was that close.
Okay, so you had a good, clean vote.
And
right.
People are going to have to go to their councilmen and their county commissioners and demand, because they're not going to do away with electronic voting. We know that.
Well,
but
as long as it's
monitor,
as long as there are lobbyists, yeah.
Right. And I can't believe that Kasich got it in Ohio. I mean, and the things he has pulled since he's gotten there, and like your previous caller about the fracking.
Yep.
Halliburton had filed bankruptcy, correct?
They were close to it.
Well, it's a thing in today's paper. They are opposing it right here in a town close to me.
Yeah. They're lobbying. Sandy, I'm sorry to cut you off. We're out of time, but thank you for the call. You made your point very, very eloquently. And Halliburton, and not just the entire natural gas industry, the whole fracking industry. They're running all these ads on TV, and they're pouring money on this city.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more of your calls and more news of the day right after this, 45 minutes past the hour.
Up on the housetop, reindeer paws. Out jumps good old Santa Claus. Down through the chimney with lots of toys. All for the little ones' Christmas joys. Oh, who wouldn't go? Who wouldn't go? Up on the housetop, click,
Jacob,
click,
you get some of the dorkiest the Christmas chimney. Bumper music. I don't know what kind of childhood you had, but anyhow, happy holidays. Welcome. Fortunately, Jacob is laughing hysterically. Welcome back. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Hey, Victoria, what's up?
Well, we're going from the ridiculous to the superlatives in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
I'm talking about the debacle over the payroll tax cut extension and the various attempts to pass it.
Yeah, there's some speculation that it might have been the Occuthon this weekend. Jacob, our associate producer, and a whole bunch of talk radio hosts all over the country got together and did a 24-hour fundraiser for the Occupy movement, and it was like Occupy the Airwaves. They did it on radio,
yeah,
and some of it out of the studio. And, by coincidence, all of a sudden, the House Republicans changed their mind on things, you think?
Anything is possible.
But probably not, yeah.
Okay. Probably not.
Yeah.
Well, today, Representative Phil Gingrey of Georgia, he who apologized to Rush Limbaugh a couple of years ago, you may remember, for criticizing him one day, then the next day calling up his show and abjectly apologizing
yes,
to him.
Yes, one of many Republicans to have kissed that particular
ring.
Yes, thank you.
Indeed. Now claims he's a member of the House Tea Party Caucus, says today that Republicans are rallying behind Speaker John Boehner in the payroll tax cut standoff, calls him William Wallace in their Braveheart moment.
Does he think that most Americans even have a clue who William Wallace was?
No, but they
saw the movie. They know
Mel Gibson and Braveheart.
Yeah, they know Braveheart means something, right?
Right. And that they're the good guys. I mean, I don't know. I think they're more like Guy Fawkes at this point.
Well, most Americans don't know who Guy Fawkes was either.
Right.
In fact, so many Americans think Guy Fawkes was the good guy. They don't
That's
realize
right.
He was the bad guy.
Well, it's crazy here. It's crazy here.
So you're talking about Capitol Hill.
Washington, D.C., Capitol
yes.
Hill, and the White House. After the Senate passed the payroll tax extension for 2 months, only 89 to 10, which you can't pass legislation on a ring your mother, 89 to 10.
Yes.
Only 7 Republicans voted against it. They all went home. Speaker Boehner convened a call of his caucus Saturday and said, hey, this is a victory. We'll live to fight another day, and I urge you to vote for it. That is what several GOP sources say.
Right, and at that point, Eric Cantor said, put down that drink and that cigarette, Mr. Boehner, and please notice that pinprick in your back. It is a knife in my hand.
That's correct. And the Tea Party caucus rose up as one and said, oh, no, we're not doing this. It doesn't have conservative riders in it.
Right.
It's not for a year, and we don't like it anyway.
It's not wackadoodle enough.
No. So
what kind of wackadoodle stuff did the Tea Party caucus want put into this?
Well, I have seen no reports, actually, of what they want put in it. And I think that will emerge over the course of the next 24 hours after the vote at 6:30 tonight, which will take place on the Senate bill, which is probably going to be voted down, except Democrats are being whipped to vote for the bill.
Right.
To see if every Democrat will vote for the bill. Now, I don't know whether they all will, but if they will.
This is Steny Hoyer's job, right?
Right.
Yeah.
If they will all vote for the bill, 192, it would require 26 Republicans to do the same to form a majority of 218.
So they could beat the Tea Party. They could ignore the Tea Party caucus.
Right. Now, there's a problem because not every House member came back after the weekend. There are some who are retiring and there are some who are in safe seats and they couldn't be bothered to return.
Mm.
So the math may not add up. So Boehner may be safe on this vote because he intends this vote to fail.
Oh, really?
Yes, he wants this Senate vote to fail to show, well, no, we can't pass the Senate bill here. We're going to have to change this bill to a one-year extension, and then we want it discussed in conference committee, and we want the Senate to come back from its recess right this minute.
Now, is that John Boehner trying to say, pulling Al Haig, I'm in charge here? Or and outdo the turtle, Mitch McConnell, or is that John Boehner capitulating to Eric Cantor's knife in his back?
Both.
Or okay, both. Okay.
Both. And also showing President Obama as well, and also trying to make sure that he does not get blamed for 160 million people seeing their taxes go up in a couple of weeks. And he wants to show Harry Reid that he's what's what as well.
But Harry Reid has said the Senate is gone. Good luck, Charlie.
Right. And he doubled down on that today and said, I will not reopen negotiations until the House follows through and passes this agreement that was negotiated by Republican leaders and supported by 90% of the Senate. So he's saying the Senate will not come back even if they pass some version of the bill, which they will change, and get it to conference committee.
At which point Boehner is betting that Harry Reid gets blamed for shutting down the government.
Right. And he's also betting that Harry Reid, being a Democrat, will either blink or get blamed. Blink or blame.
Right. And I would submit to you that given the power of Fox News and 900 right-wing talk show outlets out there across the nation, the odds are fairly high that he's right.
The odds are fairly high that he's right, but sometimes Harry Reid has a spine.
Yes.
And he's got 89 votes.
Yes, which is pretty unprecedented.
It's pretty unprecedented. Mm-hmm. Meantime, the president sits in the Oval Office, not smoking, and wishing he hadn't given it up.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, I'm sure. Or wishing that there were other things he could legally smoke.
Right.
Okay, Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
For the up-to-the-date news, the up-to-the-minute news from the basement of the White House. Brought to you by the way, Talk Radio News, brought to you by Ellen Ratner's new book, Self-Empowerment, 9 Things the 19th Century Can Teach Us About Living in the 21st. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Article 1. All legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in the Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and House of Representatives. And then they go through this whole thing about, who's going to be what where. And periodically, the House of Representatives has to, there's a census. Actually, there's another part of the Constitution that says every 10 years there should be a census taken. And part of the reason for this is to determine how many members of the House of Representatives each state will have. And then each state gets to decide how they determine how to split up the state for the purposes of representation. And this leads to some very interesting outcomes. We just had a census in 2010, and the state of Ohio is up to some really interesting stuff. See, here's the bottom line. It's not just Ohio. This is happening all over the country, in particular in Republican states. And so Ohio is a great case point, example of what's going on. Same, John Kasich. I mean, he's pretty much been up to and done everything that that the Koch brothers and ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and, you know, which is funded by the Koch brothers and all these other things that they want, is how they get away with changing congressional districts so that Republican safe seats are Republican safe seats forever and Democratic safe seats become really dicey, or occasionally are safe seats forever, but, you know, in a largely Republican state, are kind of dicey. Cliff Schechter is with us. He is the progressive PR strategist and syndicated columnist with Al Jazeera and others. LibertasLLC.com is his website. Cliff, welcome back to the program.
Thanks as always, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better, and I hope the same is true of you. I should add that you also live in Ohio.
I do, yes.
Although you spend a lot of time in D.C. and other places in this country as a political consultant and observer, strategist, what the hell's going on in your state?
That's just a perfect way of putting it. Well, you have a great intro there, Tom. I think you covered it. John Kasich won, and during the election made it sound like everything would be bipartisan and wanted the state to move forward together. I mean, you know, we've heard this song and dance before. I think I seem to remember George W. Bush saying something about being a unifier. This is what these guys say when they want to get elected.
Right.
But obviously he's run things here. I mean, with our recent referendum to overthrow their union attack on public sector unions, where he was defeated in a huge way.
Yep.
I mean, people here, you know, they're not going for what he's doing. He's approval ratings in the 30s. But, I mean, this is even broader than that, I would think. I mean, we all remember, of course, what Tom DeLay did, you know, back in the mid-2000s. I don't remember if it was about 2003 or 2004 with the mid-decade redistricting where he just grabbed a number of seats for Republicans and got himself into some trouble with some corporate money laundering doing it. But in the end, the results were the Republicans gained a number of seats. I mean, it's the same thing. It's a Republican Party that doesn't respect our Democratic traditions in the slightest, and you know they will do anything to gain extra seats. So here in Ohio, it's the same thing.
Right. You know, What are they doing?
Well, you got the Speaker of the House, and I mean this nationally, John Boehner, and his staff have been coordinating with the folks here drawing the seats.
Right. Tom DeLay used to do this nationally when he was the Speaker of the House. I remember that very
exactly
well.
Exactly right. I mean, this is how he eventually got one of the ways he eventually got into trouble with the law. John Boehner is doing this in the same way, trying to solidify his hold on the speakership in the House. Ohio, as you know, is a 50-50 state. Regardless of what happened in 2010, where the Republicans won big, the Democrats had the same kind of year in 2006 here. I mean, this is the way this state goes, and yet they've drawn these seats, so 12 of 16, yeah, three-quarters of them, are heavy Republican leans. I mean, some of these districts throw people that were until recently 110 miles apart into districts, so they have to go up against each other. And my personal favorite is we've got this company here, the Timken Corporation, that's a huge donor to the Republican Party. There's an email trail showing that literally Boehner's staff requested that they redraw this district for Representative Renacci, who's one of these Tea Party types, at the last minute to do an extra carve-out, as you call it, just to stick this one company in his district because they're so pro-Republican in terms of their giving. That would help him maintain.
So that corporation would be inclined to give their political donations to that particular Tea Party Republican as opposed to some other candidate.
Right, because Renacci's a first-termer who is a Tea Party. He knocked off Representative Boccieri, a Democrat who used to represent that district, and they want to solidify, you know, the crazy group of teabag freshmen that came in last time. I mean, this guy's one of them. That's one of the ways they do it. Another one, albeit a more moderate Republican, is, you know, obviously that's these days what that means. Who knows? It just means he's not completely crazy, which is Representative Steve Stivers here in the Columbus area. They're redistricting. They made sure to throw a bunch of banks into his district because he's a former bank lobbyist.
Right.
So, I mean, they've done things that really even go beyond what you want. I'm certainly beyond what was once considered normal, but I mean, along the lines of what Tom DeLay did. I mean, they're basically trying to take, at least Texas is a very Republican state, and it still was a power grab.
Right.
This is a very purple state,
right,
and they're trying to set it up so that for the next 10 years they'll be guaranteed three-quarters of the seats here, and Boehner's been behind the whole thing. And
do these emails reveal anything that is illegal, or do they just, you know, open the door to the sausage factory so you can see how the sausage is being made?
They definitely open the door to the sausage factory and show how
you know, undemocratic this process is. I'm not sure if there's anything illegal yet, but there are a number of fair, good government groups that are looking into this to find out right. if there have been illegalities. I don't think people at first knew what to say about what DeLay did. They just knew it was wrong, and then of course they found he was using the RNC to you know launder money into Texas. Use corporate money, of course.
Right.
Now everybody uses corporate money, so I'm not sure.
Right, but Tom DeLay is still looking at prison time for it because
right.
it's still illegal in Texas. Although we don't, I don't think it's illegal in Ohio. But you know, Texas still had that law that was a state version of the Tillman Act passed in 1907.
Right from the last real progressive era. My
right.
guess is
when the Republicans were the majority progressives. Oddly
yes,
enough.
when Teddy Roosevelt. Well, obviously we were a very different country when. Yes, when you're Teddy Roosevelt, where you're progressive.
Yeah.
Strange.
Teddy Roosevelt. And even Taft to some
now.
Extent. I mean, you know, of all things. We're talking with Cliff Schechter, national progressive PR strategist, nationally syndicated columnist, LibertasLLC.com. Cliff, I'm curious. You said the state is a very purple state. Dennis Kucinich represents that state. Did Ohio lose one congressional district? Is that why he is suddenly in a primary against another sitting Democrat?
Well, we in the end lost two seats, but that's
you lost
not
two.
Yeah,
because you lost population.
That's exactly right. We lost population, and just as you were mentioning when it began, that you have the census every 10 years. They reallocate seats in the House based upon that. We lost two, and that's fine. But yeah, but that's not the reason. Of course, they set Dennis Kucinich up to be in a primary because that's what they want. They set again some of these Democratic districts that weren't anywhere near each other. They've set them up so Democrats will have to take each other on, or they've created districts. That really, I mean, this what maybe what's illegal. They've created some districts that completely disenfranchise large groups of people who, you know, they're either there's certain districts that a number of African Americans are thrown into that are going to have no voice. There's other districts where they've just created literally 85-90% Democratic districts
right.
so they can carve out the other.
Yeah, and aren't there laws? Hasn't Congress passed laws, or hasn't the Supreme Court interpreted the Constitution to say that districts actually have to be representative, or am I? Or can they just do anything they want?
They have. I mean, you know, as we know, anything can be twisted around in the era of Citizens United and the rest with the Scalia gang. But
yeah.
I would think that yes, they have interpreted it that way. They're supposed to. You're supposed to somehow represent districts that have common interests. And there's just no common interest in any of these districts here. They're just a bunch of fake lines on land drawn to throw people together so
right.
Republicans can win the most seats. So
yeah.
I still think there's a shot, and we can always get this on a referendum here in 2012 and overturn it, and of course then Kasich may really get what he deserves.
That would be very interesting. Okay, Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com. Thanks, Cliff, for the news from Ohio.
All right. Thanks so
Great
much, Tom.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour, and it's still, still no progress in the House of Representatives. We'll see if the Tea Party can hold them up.
I went back to Ohio, but my city was gone. There was no train station. There was no downtown.
Oh, is that funny? A song about Ohio, but that's the part where the lyrics kick in to what is the theme song for the Rush Limbaugh Show. How very entertaining! Thank you for that, Jacob. Is Accuthon? He spent the whole weekend doing this Accuthon thing. Him and Nicole Sandler and I guess Mike Malloy got in on it. And there were a whole bunch of you're going to have to give me a list of all the people so I can acknowledge them on the air and who are raising money for the Occupy movements. And is it Accuthon dot something? What is it? .com. Accuthon.com was the website for their Occupy the Airwaves. And which is what we do here every day. We occupy the airwaves. And I had a caller a few minutes ago who said, I was watching Fox News the other day and they were talking about how we needed to get rid of unemployment insurance because it just makes people lazy and they don't go out and look for a job. And if you're a regular reader of the Center for American Progress's blog, Think Progress, for example, you probably caught in the last couple of days, they did a very good job of summarizing a study that was a very comprehensive study that was done that looked at the difference between people who are getting unemployment checks and people who are not for various reasons. And you when you wash out all the other factors like, age, disability,
education, you know, regionality, whatever. When you wash all that stuff out and you just, you're just looking at whether or not, you know, the same person with or without a, an unemployment check. What they found was that people who have unemployment checks spend more time looking for jobs than people who don't have unemployment checks. Now, the Republican meme on this, the Republican pitch on this that you will hear on right-wing talk radio every day, anywhere in America, it's all, it is everywhere, is, you know, Congress should not extend unemployment because unemployment checks allow people to just sit around on the couch and eat bonbons while they're watching The Price is Right. Or something even worse. They're watching pay for porn or something. You know, it's a, whatever. I mean, they'll come up with the worst characterization they can. Actually, typically, probably their characterization would be not of men, but of women, and in fact, of women of color, because that's who conservatives like to pick on. And go back to Ronald Reagan and his welfare queen. But this is the whole thing with the unemployment checks, is they and the sad thing is that people buy this. Because there is arguably a certain twisted logic to the idea that if you're paid to sit on the, if you're paid and you don't have to do anything in exchange for that pay, that you might be inclined to sit on the couch and, you know, grow your girth and watch television or play video games. But the fact of this study was that people who have unemployment checks, because they have a little extra money, use that money to drive around to places where they could get a job and knock on doors. They use that money to prepare nice resumes over at, you know, the local copy shop and send them out. They use that money to spend on their cell phone minutes calling prospective employers. They use that money to provide them with enough of a social safety net that they can actually aggressively be out looking in the job market. And the people who don't get unemployment insurance are more likely to give up. Now, what this study didn't get into is what happens when people give up. But we know from the research that's been done, for example, by Wilkerson and Pickett, and you can read this over at equalitytrust.org.uk or by reading their book, The Spirit Level, or their previous book, Why Inequality Matters, that when people give up, what you see is an increase in crime rate, you see an increase in homicides, you see an increase in child abuse, you see an increase in drug abuse, both prescription and non-prescription, you see an increase in sexually transmitted diseases, teen pregnancies, you know, I mean, just fill in the blanks. All these social ills, poor education outcomes, higher dropout rates, lower graduation rates, lower college entrance rates, lower college graduation rates, the commons start to fall apart. I mean, everything starts to fall apart. And you could argue that it all begins with this right-wing Republican conservative ideology of shred the safety net. And an essential part of the safety net is unemployment insurance. In fact, of all the things that you can do that ultimately stimulate the economy and make the country a more equal economy, and make the world a better world, the two things that you can do that produce the biggest immediate result and long-term result are to provide people with money to buy food, which we usually refer to as food stamps, although there's a variety of ways that that happens, provide people with money to buy food and provide people with unemployment insurance, provide people who are unemployed with a check. Every week or every 2 weeks or every month, however it works in state to state, region to region, so that they have some floor through which they will not fall. Now, this is not a newer radical idea. Thomas Paine, who Glenn Beck loves to twist and distort, suggested this in 1793 in his book Agrarian Justice. He referenced it in his book, The Rights of Man.
this was an idea that we has been kicking around the Republic for a long, long time and has been tried in a variety of ways in a variety of places over and over and over, literally from the founding of our country. And now, you know, was institutionalized during the Great Depression and the New Deal by Franklin Roosevelt. Unemployment insurance. Brought to you by Democrats and therefore hated by Republicans. Now, why is it that you get the biggest bang for the buck from unemployment insurance and food stamps? Because 100% of it gets used immediately. Why is it that it is stupid to be frantic about not, trying to prevent tax increases on after the first $1 million in income? Because all that does is keep Swiss bank accounts from swelling up.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Coming up next, your calls and the good, the bad, and the new vocabulary word, ugly. It's the good, the bad, and the very, very scorbutically ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, a supplement for the brain. The good, Congressman Barney Frank. If you like seeing conservative commentators get their lunch handed to them, or some other body part, as they do so often on my show, then you would have loved to have seen what Barney Frank did to George Will yesterday on ABC's This Week. Frank called Will and other Republicans out for their opposition to marijuana legalization, saying, "This is a great embarrassment for conservatives. This is big government. Who can I have sex with? Who can I marry? What can I read? What can I smoke? It's the conservatives who want to intrude on personal liberty." End of quote. He's right. And now Republicans want big government to analyze the body fluids of poor people receiving unemployment benefits. So put aside the talking points. Aren't Republicans really the party of big government? Kudos to Barney Frank for calling them out. The bad, Bill O'Reilly. GOP TV's favorite talking head weighed in on the Ron Paul presidential candidacy this morning in an interview with NBC. Paul is the only anti-war candidate among Democrats and Republicans, which, according to Bill O'Reilly, disqualifies him from being president. O'Reilly said about Paul, "His foreign policy disqualifies him in my eyes as an American." End quote. Look, there are a lot of reasons why Paul shouldn't be president, but his views on our nation's war machine are perhaps the one reason why he should be president. But O'Reilly and other neocons at GOP TV know that war is profitable, so let's keep building those tanks and missiles, and let's keep invading as many foreign countries as we can. Considering that every president since Reagan has started a new war, it sadly appears that being a warmonger is a requisite for the White House nowadays. And the very, very ugly Rush Limbaugh. So guess who Limpulse is picking on now? Try children living in poverty. That's right, on his radio show this week, or last week rather, Limbaugh went after kids who were too poor to afford school lunches by saying the free school lunch programs, quote,
condition children to not feed themselves.
He went on to say the kids who depend on free or reduced school lunches turn into
wanton waifs and serfs dependent on the state.
Right. So we should just let poor kids starve at school. If only we could get those freeloading second graders to take some responsibility for themselves, then we could all get rich in America. Right, Rush? This guy is one of the most high-profile conservatives in the country, and he's using his soapbox to bash poor children? So expect Republicans in Congress to listen to their overlord and propose cutting away school lunch programs as soon as possible. And that's very, very ugly. It's incredibly ugly. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number. And, a number of people have emailed or called me to point this out. Georgia in Jamestown, North Dakota. I'll let you say it while I'm looking for the study, because I think the study filtered this out. But go ahead.
Yeah, one of my great frustrations when they deal with unemployment insurance is that it's mandated that you look for work. While you are unemployed, you need to report weekly when, where, how.
Right.
You know, did you apply online? Did you send in an application? So it's frustrating because I was there. I am now employed and happy to be so.
Right.
But, yeah, it's important that people know that you must be looking for work.
Yeah, you know, you're right. And I'm looking for the article, and it is not quickly popping up, so I'm just going to have to leave it at that. But, yeah, you're right. We'll just leave it at that. I may be wrong on this, Georgia. Thank you very much for the call, and I appreciate it. I truly do. Pam in Milford, Maine. Hey, Pam, what's up?
Hey, Tom. The question I had to ask was about people who don't qualify for unemployment, or they work for a small company that doesn't contribute, or they work for a nonprofit, or they got a lousy job.
Right.
And do you have any idea?
Well, the
so-called unemployed never did get unemployment.
Right. The mistake, Pam, that I made was going off without the study in front of me, which I usually don't do, and I did today. And I'm going to have to track this thing down. I couldn't do it just on the fly right then, although maybe somebody in the chat room has already gone. Aha! Here it is, right here. Sue already found it. Hang on just a second. Let me pull this thing up. And a new study from Congress's Joint Economic Committee debunks the prevailing conservative notion that unemployment insurance, this is from Think Progress, dissuades people from looking for a job. On the contrary, the report finds beneficiaries of federal UI benefits have spent more time searching for work than those who are ineligible for UI benefits. In fact, since Congress enacted federal unemployment benefits, time spent looking for a job has tripled among the long-term unemployed. As this chart shows, and it's got a chart that just basically shows double to triple, while unemployment rose during the recession, people who received UI benefits spent more time looking for work than those who didn't qualify for the federal program. And this makes sense. Federal unemployment insurance requires recipients to actively look for new work and also gives them more flexibility to do so. Someone with no job and no unemployment benefits will likely have to focus first on paying bills on a day-to-day basis. And while some studies have attributed UI benefits to marginal increases, less than 2 weeks, and the length someone remains unemployed, the JEC report concludes that this minor effect is, quote, simply because some of those unemployed workers would have otherwise dropped out of the labor force discouraged by lack of job prospects were it not for their UI benefits. Okay, that was the study that I read back on December 15th. Alex Seitzwald, was writing it for the Senate. For the Center for American Progress.
That's not the same thing, though, really.
Yeah, no, it's not.
I mean, I worked for a nonprofit organization, and they did not contribute to unemployment insurance. And so when I was unemployed from them, I didn't get any unemployment insurance.
Yikes.
So I don't know how many people out there are like that.
Now, that's in the state of Maine. You're calling from Milford, Maine, right?
Well, yeah, this was Maine, right?
See, I've employed people in the states of Georgia, Michigan, New Hampshire, Oregon, and maybe one other, and Vermont. And in every one of those states, to the best of my knowledge, we were, as the employer, required to pay into unemployment insurance. That it was administered by the state, and we were, you know, if we didn't make those payments, then we were in big trouble. Maybe I'm missing something here.
I don't know. You and your friend are working as carpenters.
Right.
And you don't have any.
So what you're talking about is you were working in what's sometimes called the gray market, which is.
Well, apparently it was a nonprofit, a small nonprofit organization.
Okay, I know that some.
It never even occurred to me to ask.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought everybody.
Yeah.
Had to pay in, and therefore everybody would get out.
Right. Well, it's not inconceivable that the rules are different in Maine too. As I said, I have not lived there or run a business there. I don't know. Maybe somebody will, and we'll find out. Thank you very much for that, Pam. I appreciate the call, Ron in Minot, North Dakota. Minot. How do you say it?
Minot, as in why.
Minot, as in why not? Thank you. Of course. Yeah. What's up, Ron?
It's in western North Dakota, and we have this Bakken, a shale oil field, Bakken oil field here, which they're developing through fracking.
Oh, my.
And last year, I called in earlier once and mentioned that last year the state legislature, with the exception of one Democrat who's now running for governor, in totem, this legislature voted that fracking was deemed harmless.
Right.
Which meant that now if there are harms, the state will be sued, not the oil company. During a recent legislative session, and I do have a question for you, but during our recent special session, which was called because the EPA has said that they're going to come in and they want to put a halt to this fracking, which would really
put a halt to this boom in North Dakota. And so this special legislative session set aside $1 million to sue the federal government, or to sue the EPA, actually, if they put a halt to it. Now, I know there are states' rights. Is this possible the states can sue the federal government like that? And secondly, I don't think our legislative body is representing the will of many farmers and many people like me who do not see this oil as a necessarily good thing.
Right. States can sue the federal government. They can use the court system to try to stop the federal government from doing things or force the federal government to do things. That can be done. And B, I don't think you're being represented either. What you have is, particularly if the fracking companies bought off enough of your legislators that they passed a statement that fracking is safe, and therefore if anybody gets harmed, they get to sue the state rather than the oil companies. That's a super externalization of liabilities or costs and total internalization of profits. All the money the oil companies get to make, they get to keep. All the liability they've dumped on the state, and I guarantee you that didn't happen just out of thin air. I mean, legislators don't just wake up one morning and say, gee, I think I'll remove all liability from the oil companies for fracking. There's definitely a little bakshish going on here. So, make sense?
Yeah, thanks. But I don't know. I wish there was more of a 99% movement in our state, which tends to be very conservative.
Well, here's what Ron.
It's pro-business.
Go ahead.
Well, they're pro-business, but they don't realize that the business they represent is Main Street, not this corporate, not these guys.
Yeah, here's what you do is you show up at the local Democratic Party and say, I'd like to be a precinct committee person. I would like to participate. I want to help out. I want to make things happen in this state. And, you know, whether there's an Occupy movement for, you know, in Minot or not, there are politicians and there is a political structure there. And it needs people like you, Ron. I encourage you. Infiltrate them. Take it over. You know, if we don't take over the institutions of this country, we're going to get crushed by them.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Or at least we'll get crushed by the big corporations that themselves are trying to take them over. And in some cases have. Oh, this is very interesting. Some of the folks in the chat room are on this. Some states require it but don't collect. Virginia didn't collect in 2002, I was told. Only religious organizations are exempt from paying unemployment. All of the companies. This is another person in the chat room. Another person, Harry, says a famous tragedy happened here in Minot. Oh, yeah, okay. Here, Merwina says there's no company size requirement. However, self-employed people and subcontractors are exempt. Straight karma, thank you, Thomas. So right. It's always nice to hear. On the other hand, Renegade says, wrong, Tom. I worked for a church for 5 years, laid off due to lack of funds, no unemployment insurance. They're not required of nonprofits in California. Lots of people in that category. On the other hand, self-employed Schedule C or 1065, 1120s, 1120s. This is from Merwina. And subcontractors, thank you, 1099 NEC. Cannot collect unemployment. So there's apparently a fairly large body of people who are just not even eligible to collect unemployment or whose companies are not required to pay into it. Mike in Columbia, Missouri. Hey, Mike, what's up? Mike? No Mike. Okay. Alma in Tacoma. Hey, Alma, what's on your mind today?
A little off topic, but it's been something I've been concerned about for some time.
Mm-hmm.
Since I flew over the country when it was flooded one time.
Mm-hmm.
And where we are, water is expensive. It's nasty. We have to buy our water. Why can't they harness that water, that flood water, and store it? Instead of pipelines, we can't drink that.
Yeah.
Instead of pipelines, why not harness our water and take it to the areas where it's needed?
Yeah.
I think to hear what
Alma,
it's a lot of jobs for people.
Yeah, it could be. Alma, thank you for the call and for the suggestion. I honestly don't know. You know, it might be a really cool idea, and on the other hand, you may have filtration and health problems, and you may have and what, you know, aquifers are like giant underground lakes, and the way that they get replenished is periodic rain and flooding, and it slowly seeps down through the ground. So, you know, historically, before we came along and sort of messing everything all up, there was a natural process there, but I just don't know. David in Suffield, Connecticut. Hey, David, thanks for listening to WHMP. What's up?
I got a suggestion that unemployment should have a minimum amount that they give you to survive on.
Yes, I agree.
I worked at two different plants, right, for 90 days each, right?
Yeah.
And they just let me go afterwards.
Right.
And when I went to get unemployment, I was told that I was only going to get $25 a week. Nobody can live on that.
Oh, it's because you only work 90 days?
Well, I worked for two different places 90 days each.
Right.
So it was actually like 6 months.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think that unemployment
places let me go at the, you know, the minimum amount of time because they just don't want to keep anybody permanent or let them into the unions or whatever their reason was.
Yeah.
And, you know, both places I didn't miss a single day of work, worked full time plus all the overtime they offered.
Well, in some states and in some places,
I went to get unemployment, all they offered was $25 a week. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. David, thanks for sharing
that
story.
There should be a minimum that somebody could live on.
I agree. There should be. And you know, in many of the European countries, you get unemployment for as long as you need it, whether it's a year or whether it's 5 years, because they realize that there are business cycles and there are, you know, regional differences. And sometimes a factory will go out of business in a town and it'll wipe out the town for a while. And they don't want to wipe out the people. They want the people to have enough money in their pockets that they're still spending things that the town rebuilds itself and so on and so forth. I mean, there's a lot of really, really good reasons for a good national unemployment insurance program. Excuse me. Sean, listening to WSLR in Sarasota, Florida. Hey, Sean, what's up?
No, I'm actually watching you at home on free speech.
Oh, okay.
I listen to you at our radio station, our community radio station.
Okay.
Just a couple real quick points. I know time is of the essence. Fracking is different geologically where you're drilling for the natural gas, and chemicals are used in some areas that pollute the side stream of the drilling site. So like in your northeast, it's hard bedrock. So if you use chemicals out west, it's a little different. Anyway, so you do have...
You mean they use different chemicals depending on the type of rock?
Yes,
Why?
Yeah, I just talked to a hydrogeologist because it's just the process. They want to get there quick.
Right,
so,
okay.
And the other point is Roosevelt had the WPA and the CC,
CCC,
in the 30s, and it worked.
Yeah.
It worked. Well, let's do it locally. It can be done again. And
yeah.
Rebuild our infrastructure, which is crumbling.
Yeah.
You know, Dr. Sachs talks about this, you know, him. So, I mean, let's get her done.
Yeah, no, it all makes perfect sense. Question: why have you ever heard of, you know, because the fracking companies have been successful in denying anybody the ability to find out what the chemicals are that they're pumping into the ground, and because historically it's been the province of organized crime to illegally dispose of toxic chemicals.
Correct.
But, you know, it's 60 minutes out of them. This was like 30 years ago that they were spraying them on roads as oil, you know, and they were discovering these cancer streets that had cancer on them and things. Any idea? Have you run across anything? All I've heard is speculation. It's probably all it is. It's probably that they're not disposing of toxic chemicals this way as a cheaper way of disposing of them. Or maybe they're chemicals that are not quite so expensive that, but you know, how do we know what's in these chemicals, and could it be that they're toxic, that it's toxic waste?
Every chemical, we have over 80,000 chemicals produced in this country, has an MSDA sheet by federal law. It has to have a manufacturer safety data sheet.
Right.
That's the trail right there.
Right. And so if we could...
my brother-in-law is a hydrogeologist. He does environmental testing.
Right.
And I'll send you an email.
Post it on our daily blog. We'll see it there. Sean, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. And thanks for the information. Coming up tomorrow, just a couple weeks to go till the Iowa caucuses. Is anyone making any $10,000 bets as to which GOP candidate will come out on top? I'll ask Republican Congressman Steve King and see if he's made his choice or if he wants to gamble Mitt Romney's money. And don't forget, democracy begins when you get active, when you show up, tag. You're it. Get out there and occupy something. And don't forget, freespeech.org, and hunterschool.org. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.